Welcome to Talking Global Infrastructure, brought to you by the Global Infrastructure Investor Association. Now more than ever, governments around the world are recognizing the importance of partnership with the private sector to deliver the transformational investment required to meet global challenges. But how do we deliver the enormous scale of investment needed to close the infrastructure gap in an affordable way, whilst addressing societal challenges such as net zero commitments, climate resilience, and the digital economy? GIIA and its members are at the forefront of this debate, and Talking Global Infrastructure is the podcast that will delve into these subjects and more to bring you valuable insights from the experts in the sector.
I'm Lawrence Slade, CEO of the Global Infrastructure Investor Association. And in this, our first episode of our new podcast series, I'm really delighted to be speaking to two guests from EY. First off, Udit Gandhi, who's a partner in EY's Transaction Advisory Services practice. And secondly, Mike Parker, EY's Americas Infrastructure Leader. Udit and Mike are going to be sharing their thoughts on recent and future trends in infrastructure investment and looking at it through the lens of the latest EY-GIA Global Asset Database report. Now, this is a special exercise we undertake each year with EY support to really track the number, the nature, and the location of where our members' assets are around the world and to help us understand any trends. So hi to Udit and to Mike, and thank you very much for joining us, and welcome to the podcast, both of you.
Hi, Lawrence. Good to be here.
Great. Well, and Lawrence, thank you for the chance to be here.
Thanks. And my first question is actually to you, Udit. And I know we've recently concluded the latest edition of the asset database. But what I was wondering is if you could just very quickly run through for us what you see as the key headlines coming from this year's report.
Of course. Well, the numbers are just incredibly impressive. GIIA members have made huge amounts of infrastructure investments globally, and 66 investor members in 70 countries have invested $1.28 trillion in over 2,000 infrastructure assets. Just to put those numbers into context, GIIA's investee assets are responsible for about a tenth of global shipping freight, about 15% of global air passengers go through GIIA-owned, member-owned airports. They own and operate 70,000 kilometers worth of roads, produce 6% of the Earth's renewable energy capacity, that's over 150 gigawatts, which avoids 220 million tons of CO2 across the world, equivalent to the annual carbon emissions of Egypt, 4 million kilometers of fiber optic cable, enough to wrap around the world nearly 100 times, providing critical care through 90,000 hospitals. The numbers are just mind-boggling. Really, really impressive.
Thanks, Udit. Yeah, I have to agree. Those are impressive numbers. And I think one of the things we like to say is you couldn't travel across the US or you couldn't travel across Europe without interacting at some point with some of our members' infrastructure. And of course, we've seen a significant amount of growth over the last 12 years. Very, very impressive, of course, with the background of the pandemic. And we've seen members investing somewhere in the region of $340 billion through over 350 transactions, adding some 300 plus infrastructure assets with an average transaction size that's just shy of $1 billion. So when we're thinking about trends, Udit, What kind of sector trends and market movements really stand out the most this year? And what would you say the drivers are?
Yeah, so there are some pretty clear trends that we're seeing in the market and that emerge through the data. I'm going to talk about three things that are pretty clear in the data for 2021, which is what the survey covered. But I'm also going to talk about one really important element that's become more relevant recently or more evident recently, which has to do with the topic of energy security, but let me come back to that. So the first trend that we continue to see is fundraising for core and non-core infrastructure investment funds has continued to grow on a tear. Like last year, between Q1 and Q3, infrastructure funds raised $81.2 billion. When you look at the numbers this year, that's continued to be a very high level of fundraising. There was approximately $70 billion that had been raised in Q1 of 2022 at the end, looking back over the last 12 months. So you're talking about a range of $70 to $100 billion of fundraising in a year. which is a very strong level. So that's key observation number one. The second is there's a continued step up in telecoms infrastructure investment. I think the pandemic has helped prove the infrastructure case for such investments, although valuations clearly remain very challenging. But we have continued to see more and more investors become interested in investing in fiber towers and data centers. And that's a combination of more generalist infrastructure investors, but also increasingly more specialist telecoms infrastructure funds. So the third trend that we're seeing is the acceleration of energy transition-driven investments because of a renewed urgency in the focus on ESG. And that's quite appropriate given where we are as a world and the targets that we've set for ourselves around the 1.5 degree global warming, et cetera. And what we're seeing is that our clients are becoming more and more focused, and GIIA members are becoming almost laser focused on ensuring that none of their investments are seen as being ESG negative, and actually all of them are making a contribution to improving how we transition from legacy oil and gas to new energy. And that's really exciting. I briefly referenced the fourth area, which has become a bit more apparent in 2022 following Russia's invasion of Ukraine. But the reality is that it was always an important topic, and that's to do with energy security. So while we have, I think in Europe in particular, underinvested in gas infrastructure in the recent past, it's become quite apparent that we will need to deliver 60 BCM of non-Russian gas by the end of this year. And we'll have to deliver demand-side reductions totaling 38 BCM. So these are big numbers that need to be achieved. And we expect that there's going to be renewed focus on elements of gas infrastructure that have to do with transportation, regasification, storage, etc. So that will be a trend to watch in the coming year.
Thanks, Udit. I think there are some really important stats in there. And as you say, we were continuing the decarbonisation journey, but the terrible events in Ukraine have certainly put an extra pressure on the delivery of those and stresses we're seeing in global supplies. So, Mike, turning to you now, as President Biden said, it's infrastructure week every week in the US now. We've seen finally the passing of the IIJA bill. There's an awful lot going on. What do you see as the major trends and what's coming out of the bill now over in the States?
Thanks, Lawrence. And it's great to have the chance to talk with you and with your listeners and members. It is a really exciting time to be working in infrastructure in the U.S. The bipartisan infrastructure law, or variantly called IIJA, the Infrastructure Investment and Jobs Act, passed the end of last year. $1.2 trillion headline number, about $550 billion of that is incremental new spending. The significance of that is twofold. First off, actually, it's stability. We have clarity now, both for new programs, but as well as pre-existing ones, that there's a five-year commitment. Second of all, the incremental new programs comprise really historic investments in areas that are of keen interest both to society and public sector, but also to your investor base. And so it includes unprecedented investment levels in broadband networks, almost $65 billion overall with respect to broadband, $42 billion of that in connectivity grants, and then additional monies to subsidize closing the digital divide. And that really is on top of amounts that were in the Coronavirus Response Act, the CARES Act, and the American Rescue Plan Act, the stimulus bills, which have the infrastructure bill most recently followed. There's also very significant numbers to fund investments in clean energy and the expansion of tax credits related to energy projects. And in addition to directly funding clean energy, even across areas like surface transportation, there's new flexibility or even requirements to look at low and no emission vehicles, charging infrastructure, and other other dimensions that are necessary for a full energy transition. And so really, when you go across the bill, you start to realize it's what's been that there's some overall key themes, including that energy transition and the digital divide. And a lot of the bill will provide funding that can be not just direct grant, but also will catalyze and make economic investment opportunities. Just to round off, there's $55 billion towards water infrastructure, including for clean drinking, and to support investment into lead pipes and water and wastewater treatment facilities, or I should say the removal and abatement of lead pipes, and more than $110 billion overall in that surface transportation number. Within the market, we've seen levels of infrastructure investment from your member base. The main drivers have been a transition to net zero and those types of digital assets that we were talking about. But I think as we reflect on this stimulus bill and then the IIJA, it's very important to see that the concept here is not that the federal government crowd out private capital. On the contrary, the need is actually so large that these numbers are still a minority portion of the overall spend and infrastructure deficit which exists here in the U.S. And so really, it's better to understand these new funds as intended to catalyze and attract both state and local government spending, but also utility and private investment funding. And I think we'll see a lot of opportunities for public-private partnerships across this as well.
Thanks, Mike. I think that's a really important point you make there, that although the numbers we see coming out of the federal government are absolutely vast and measured into, as you say, the hundreds of billions, actually one of the things this bill is going to do is actually open doors as we progress to private investment that can be linked to that federal money to actually make sure we're rolling out the infrastructure across the states that much faster. So it's a really important message that we're getting out to people, I think. Udit, if I can come back to you, just wondering, we've sort of obviously Mike's just run through there the sort of the scale and the extent of the infrastructure investment that we're going to be seeing over in the US, and we've spoken a little bit about the EU. What about in the UK? I mean, how are things shaping up here, do you think?
The UK remains a huge market for private infrastructure. If we just look at the database that we've released as of the end of 2021, GIIA members have over 500 assets in the UK, which compares to only a little under 600 in the rest of Europe and about 350 in the US. So, you know, because of the UK's early start in private infrastructure investment, it is still a very big and very important market for our members. 24 new investments last year compared to 11 in the prior year. So outpaced by Europe and the US last year, but growing and characterized by the famous stable regulatory regime that I think the UK is well known for, that makes the UK such an attractive private infrastructure destination. Recent price control reviews by Ofgem and Ofwat have, you know, led to a fairly stable environment. Ofcom, the communications regulator, have also clarified their position on a number of important topics. So we expect to continue to see strong activity in the UK. The other trend in the UK is that we are seeing lots of activity in new technologies around battery storage, carbon capture, hydrogen. And so there's lots of exciting things to look forward to in infrastructure this part of the world.
I think I'm getting a bit of a message here from both of you, actually, that, you know, it doesn't matter where you are, really, just being in infrastructure right now is a terribly exciting place to be with massive opportunities right the way across the global economies. But Mike, if I can bring it back to you, I think Udit made a really interesting point there about the sheer scale of assets that are held in the UK compared to the EU, but also particularly from your perspective compared to the US. And I know you've just done some work with a number of our US members to help promote or to help understand sort of some of the sectors that are of most appeal to private investment in infrastructure over in the States. Perhaps you could just quickly take us through sort of some of the key points in that particular area.
Absolutely, Lauren. So let me mention really two areas of significance. The first is just to note that we're seeing investors in the U.S. market go up the complexity curve in a number of instances, and really start looking at whole enterprises, at take privates, at the significant portions of the U.S. infrastructure base, which are already within the private sector. And in many cases, those assets need to be transformed or developed, or best owner approach can be there. But we're increasingly seeing our clients and your members bring the capabilities to look at very complex or large pools of assets and entire businesses, and to build the platforms necessary to manage them and to be the best owners. In keeping with that thinking, we were very excited to have the chance to of course, work with you and with your members to help convene a conversation around what assets governments might hold that where the private sector could be the best owner or the best operator, and to really take a fresh look at the spectrum and to understand, in the case just as but one example, where governments may own fiber optic networks and they may not have the legal or operational mandate to build spurs off of a government right-of-way. But in the hands of a private owner or operator for that network, there's, particularly with the infrastructure bill stimulus and support or subsidy, I should say, there's significant opportunity to serve new customers, and there's certainly demand. And so, you know, looking across the spectrum of mobility assets and more traditional ones that we might think about in aviation, roads, but also within the emerging EV economy. And then thinking about digital assets, and lastly, thinking about power, renewable assets, and utility assets, and to really start to understand what is sort of a top 10 or top 15 list that every government should have in mind to take a fresh look at as they meet the new challenges and societal goals that they want to achieve, and to look at where private capital can support. And so I think that's a very important exercise to do, and for us to not just articulate that private capital has dry powder when you're in a market like the U.S. where there is significant funding and there are efficient capital markets, then we have to start really looking at where the best operator and owner and the most societal benefit can come from when it comes to governmental assets. And so coincidentally, I think, nicely, some of this greater experience and the breadth of platforms and types of assets that GM members and infrastructure investors are pursuing now really have widened the aperture for the conversation that can be had with government as well. But we certainly don't expect that government will be the primary or only source of assets for your investor base. I think the private sector market will remain robust and a significant focus.
That's brilliant. Thanks very much, Mike. And yeah, you're quite right. We will be working with our good friends at the National Governors Association, amongst others, to make sure we get this message across around those core sectors and how we can really open the door to private finance in the coming years. So just turning back to yourself, Udit, I mean, we've spoken now about the UK, we've touched on the EU, and Mike's taken us through some of the core issues in the US. It would be remiss of us, though, not to have a quick run through on sort of some of the more global perspectives as we come to the end of the podcast. So perhaps you could just give us some sort of key thoughts around the global side of things.
Yes, of course, Lawrence. So interestingly, the trends that are driving infrastructure investment activity in the geographies we've just discussed apply equally, if not more so, to the other parts of the world as well. So the twin transitions of digital and energy continue apace in geographies like India and Central and South America, where we've seen a big step up in GIIA investment activity. And the focus on ESG is as important there as it is here. And in the US and the UK and in Europe. And so I would expect that the outlook is bright in all those geographies. I think it's worth acknowledging that most of our members tend to be more focused on Western Europe and the US and the UK. But I think we'll continue to find more and more opportunities to invest in good projects and very valuable projects from a social perspective. in the rest of the world. And, you know, countries like India that have a big program of renewable energy investments will benefit from that. So I'm looking forward to seeing how the GIA membership evolve their geographic focus in the coming years.
Great. Thank you very much, Udit. Yeah, I guess it's fair to say that we've got those core markets in US, UK and Europe, but actually this is a global pitch now, and we're seeing capital flow into markets right the way across the board, as you say. So look, I think that was a really good roundup of where we've got to as we approach the middle of 2022. And I think sketches out some really exciting years ahead of us as we head deeper into the 2020s and various missions that we've got around decarbonization and just improving the global population's access to high quality infrastructure. So I want to say a special thank you to Mike Parker from EY in the States, and to Udit Gandhi from EY here in London. Thank you both very, very much for sharing your thoughts and your time. And of course, look out for our next podcast episode coming soon. Thank you very much, everyone.
Thank you for listening to Talking Global Infrastructure. For more information about GIIA, please visit our website, giia.net, and look out for the next edition of our podcast by following us on LinkedIn and Twitter.